Clerk will call the docket.
Allison Chasey and Alex Bowers are pleading the act for the appellant, Jake Chapman Peterson, Jason Drummond, David L. Davis, Peter Savage.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is William D. Ashwell, counsel for the appellants Alan and Susan Chasey. I would ask this court at this time to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Your Honor, the case at point today must be reversed from the Fauquier County Circuit Court for multiple reasons. First and foremost, in this particular issue, the court occurred reversible error when it determined that Section 55332 of the Code of Virginia authorized an award of attorney's fees for the language of directly related legal costs. Additionally, the court had reversible error when it awarded attorney's fees in the amount of $150,000 for a compensatory award under that code section of $135. There are four assignments of error before the court today, and the appellant believes that two of those are actually threshold issues which the court must address before it gets to the other two. That would be an assignment of error number one of if, in fact, 55332B does authorize an award of attorney's fees, and also assignment of error number four, whether in this particular case the appellee actually carried her burden at trial of establishing any damages whatsoever as to authorize an award of attorney's fees for that particular count in her complaint. And that is where I will start this particular argument. Based on the facts, Your Honors, the appellee at trial failed to carry her burden in establishing any damages for a number of reasons. First and foremost, 55332 authorizes damages in the event of what we call statutory timber theft. That is when one, usually an adjoining landowner, does cross over and cut down timber on another landowner's property. When and if that is proven, damages come in the form of three times the value of the timber on the stump, the cost of ascertaining that particular damage, and also reforestation costs. It's a statutory calculation of $450 per acre.
Well, now, didn't they establish that? And they may not have been able to establish the cost of timber on the stump, as it's called, but didn't they establish at least the reforestation?
Your Honor, at trial, what was utilized for the damage was actually the statutory award of no more than $450 per acre. And it's the appellant's position, in fact, in evidence, there is no evidence that actually established the appellant trespass and cut down the timber at issue in this case. In fact, in the record at page 1035, the appellee herself actually admitted no actual reforestation of any of these timber had actually taken place. And as this particular statute indicates, if you are to be compensated once reforestation actually is incurred. In fact, that did not happen in this particular
case.
Well,
it's a statutory remedy, correct?
It is, Judge.
So why does it have to actually be incurred if it can reasonably be incurred in the future and is anticipated by the statute itself?
Judge, that would be the case, and I think probably the threshold issue for this particular problem is the appellant at trial did not carry her burden in establishing that the appellants even were, in fact, the ones who caused any sort of damage related to the timber. And that is exemplified in the appellant putting on the stand a surveyor who came out onto the property approximately 4 years after the alleged timber damage. After getting on the stand, the surveyor told the court that he noticed some damage along the property line, but could not and would not testify to how that timber damage came to be. And that was the extent of the appellee evidence as to the actual timber damage under 55332. So essentially our argument to the court is we don't have a causal connection between the appellants and the alleged damage whatsoever. We don't even have the value of the stumpage, the timber value. All that the trial court let go forward is the statutory remedy for reforestation costs, which we submit to the court without any proof that the appellants actually did any of this damage. How could a statutory calculation of reforestation costs go forward without any causal link to prove that the appellee would be entitled to this award? And in that same idea, that in this particular code section, without the causal connection, without the proof of any germane damages.
Can I stop you for a second? Because I thought the Chief Justice's question really was, is there any evidence of reforestation costs?
Your Honor, again at page 1051, the appellee admits on the stand that no reforestation had been paid for, had been undertaken, or had taken place. So not only do we not have a causal link between the appellant and the actual damage, we don't have any evidence and actually admission of the appellee that no reforestation had taken place whatsoever. So in looking at 55.332, we don't actually have anything upon the appellant's motion to strike, which was timely made and at trial was granted, as to the first compensatory punitive damage in this particular code section. The trial court agreed.
May I interrupt you and ask you this? 332 is a summary procedure, right? It's a unique sort of quasi-ADR procedure that you engage in this industry, in this setting, prior to going into litigation. 334 says if you don't get paid on your 332B costs or whatever they are, then you can sue somebody. Well, the 333B costs are legal costs incurred by the owner as a result of the trespass. It doesn't sound like prevailing party attorney's fees to me. It sounds like you hire a lawyer while you're fussing around with your appraisers and all the rest, trying to figure out where the boundary line is and who did what, when, and getting legal advice, out-of-pocket costs, as opposed to suing someone and getting prevailing party fees.
Your Honor, it is a very unique statute, and it does provide that summary remedy. Let's each appoint an appraiser. Let's figure out whether or not someone's going to admit to a trespass, and let's figure out if we can get the stumpage back.
And evidently, there's some legal costs sometimes associated with that summary procedure.
Yes, sir.
Well, does that imply, or does that not imply, that you get those costs plus prevailing party fees if you go into litigation later? Which may be fees or fees, but it seems like a conceptually different idea to me.
Judge, it is a conceptually different idea, especially when the legislature, in my view, uses the term cost very specifically as they do in this particular code section. And, Your Honor, actually, at the writ panel, you brought up a very good point relevant to using costs in this statutory, unique to this particular statute. We have a reference to costs, wherein you identified in 171601, you get costs anyway. So kind of the question is, well, what's the difference? And I think in this particular case, and I think that, you know, obviously having the benefit of additional research, this court has actually, in the Advanced Marine case, said that even when a particular statute enumerates the ability to recoup costs, they're still going to be constricted in how they're viewed as to the costs that are recoverable in 17.1601.
But the problem is you don't have taxable costs when you're going through the summary procedure. You're not in you're not filing stuff. So it's got to be some sort of legal cost that's different in kind than taxable costs.
Correct. And, Judge, I think the point is well taken, that essentially if there is to be something outside, an extra judicial remedy under this code section, there may be an ability for a party, if there's some kind of agreement in the enumerated way through timber experts, to accommodate some kind of resolution, that there may be an ability for a fee to be hatched out in that particular remedy. But as far as litigation, this particular code section is absent any kind of express authority. Typical with the American rule, and what this court routinely finds, that there is no expressed authorization for attorney's fees. And in this particular case, there really is no...
So there seems to be like three options. There is costs are just costs, not attorney's fees, period, which was your first position.
Yes, sir.
The opposite pole of that is his position, which is no fees or fees, and legal costs equal fees, so we get attorney's fees. Even today, he's claiming attorney's fees.
Yes, sir.
Why isn't the middle ground, no, you get out-of-pocket legal costs during the summary 332 procedure, but that's all you get?
Judge, I agree with the court in that particular issue, and I think that's exactly what the point of recognizing this summary remedy is, that in the event that you have to take this action and that you do incur costs, that here's the way you recoup them if you're able to stay essentially in that summary process. You would be able to recoup costs outside of litigation. And
You had wanted to reserve 5 minutes. You're welcome to use the time any way you'd like.
I will concede the rest of my time for
all right, rebuttal. 4 minutes, thank 47 you. Seconds.
May it please the court, my name is Jason Zellman. I represent Valerie Garvey. I want to get into the issue that we were just talking about. I think Justice Kelsey said there could be three potential interpretations of 332.
Now, you have 15 minutes, but may I suggest that you deal with the threshold issue first?
Yes.
Your opposing counsel says there is no evidence that a trespass even occurred in this record. Why don't you take the opportunity to recite what you believe the evidence is that a trespass occurred?
Well, I do believe a trespass occurred, Your Honor. And if you look at the record, there was evidence at the trial from the surveyor who testified, and this is at, I'm at A915 through A920, where the surveyor discusses there's a rather large area of disturbance, including vegetation that was turned up. There was the sign of use of heavy machinery, and there were trees that were cut down and piled up. We think that that is sufficient evidence of a trespass, and with the trees being cut down and piled up, that's the cost that are awarded for the reforestation.
Well, you may be right about that, but it's not evidence of who did it.
Well, Your Honor,
where is that evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. In addition to that, in the record, if you were to go to the hearing transcript and testimony, I'm looking at A773 and 783 through 784. There were photographs taken of large trucks. Ms. Garvey testified at trial that those trucks were the trucks of her neighbor, the Chaseys, that they had allowed those people to come onto the property to get the timber, and that she had witnessed those people come onto the property. That was her testimony at trial, Your Honor. So we think with that testimony coupled with what the surveyor testified to, that's what allowed the court to let that issue get to the jury, and that's the evidence the jury considered in reaching the threshold issue that there was a timber theft, there was a trespass, and that's what gets us further along into considering what 332.
Right, now, the trucks were actually the trucks that belonged to a commercial tree company.
Correct. They had been hired by the Chaseys.
All right. What is the evidence of the agency relationship between the person that you allege is responsible for this and the commercial trucking company?
Your Honor, I don't think there was any dispute at trial that the commercial trucking company had been hired by the Chaseys.
Well, there's a dispute now.
Well, Your Honor, I can tell you that there was evidence at the trial that the company even testified at the trial that they had taken actions because there had been damage to a bridge on a shared dirt road, and that they had taken actions to put oak wooden beams under that bridge to reinforce it.
I have no doubt that a trespass occurred.
Yes, sir.
Your opposing counsel says there's no evidence as who did it, and that's what I'm asking. Point me to where in the record I find that particular question answered.
Your Honor, again, I would refer you again to Ms. Garvey's testimony in the record. She testified at trial that she had taken photographs and that she had witnessed these people and that she had knowledge.
Refer me to a page and a line.
Your Honor, again, I'm in the 700s. It's 774 through 786 of the appendix. 774 through 786, I apologize.
Can I ask you a question? I thought that there was a verdict that was rendered for trespass that's not even a subject of an appeal. And the question is one of whether or not there was a timber theft, not whether or not there was a trespass.
That's correct, Justice. Count one was for timber theft. That was a judgment for $135. And then there was count two for trespass. And there was a $15,000 verdict rendered under count two. It is my understanding that trespass, count two, has not been appealed. There is no assignment of error relating to that. And, Your Honor, as a result of those two counts, that's how we get into what do directly related legal costs mean. What does that mean under this statute? And I would point the court
You need to appreciate the distinction that's being made. If there's not a trespass, fine, it's not appealed. And you appeal this based on theft, still the question is who took it. So the issue is still there. And so you're going to refer me to appendix page 774, 778 for the answer to that question.
786, I'm sorry.
786. All right, thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice. And Your Honor, what I would also clarify based on that point is that if we are conceding that the trespass occurred and that the Chaseys trespassed onto Ms. Garvey's property, they were the ones on the property who committed the trespass and committed the damage, and then we are saying that they also then were the ones, or their agents, who committed the timber theft to cut down the trees that led to the reforestation. But I would like to, if it's okay with the court, get into the issue.
Can I ask you a question? What evidence is there of any cost of reforestation in the record?
Your Honor, there is that in the record. Ms. Garvey admitted into evidence an estimate of what it would cost to reforest from Bartlett Tree Service. Now, admittedly, this is the cost that would be incurred in the future. I think since it is a statutory remedy, it's not a cost that had to be incurred at the time of trial, but it was a future cost that would be incurred, and that's in the record. Getting to the issue of the directly related legal costs in Section 332, I think something that maybe wasn't appreciated is the statute was amended in 2004 to include subsection B, which had not been there before. Before, the code section had referred to costs. When it was amended in 2004, it allowed for treble damages and it allowed for directly related legal costs. This is meant to be a remedial statute to allow the person who has been victimized by this timber theft to be made whole. Being a remedial statute, I think the interpretation is not just that you should be awarded costs that are incurred during the summary process in which you can put someone on notice that you believe they have trespassed on your property and committed timber theft. The parties have an opportunity to each hire an estimator. If they don't agree to that, then a third-party estimator can come in. And then if no one is satisfied with that process, then you have the opportunity to go to litigation. What happened in this case is the Chaseys refused to engage in that summary process. It was their position that they had not trespassed and that we would go direct, and Ms. Garvey made the choice to go into litigation. Being a remedial statute, being a statute that changed it to directly associated legal costs, I think that's a distinction between other statutes that just award costs.
Well, let's go there for a moment. We start with the proposition that we have what's called the American rule on attorneys' fees and costs. And unless it's provided by contract or statute, the parties bear their own costs, their own attorney's fees.
Yes.
So we look at the statute to figure out whether or not the statute provides for attorney's fees in this instance. There are over 200 instances in the Code of Virginia where costs and attorney's fees are read together, and they're read separately, costs and attorney's fees. If the legislature knows and has demonstrated in over 200 instances that they know the difference between costs and attorney's fees, why should your interpretation of attorney's fees being allowed under this term be accepted over 200 examples of the General Assembly being very specific?
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice, thank you for that question, and I appreciate it. I think the distinction here is that there are many other indications where the General Assembly has meant for someone just to be awarded costs, and that they've solely used the word costs. And there are many instances where they have, as you've noted, costs and attorney's fees. This is obviously a uniquely worded statute that is different from any other statute I could find in the Virginia Code. And it says any directly associated legal costs. If the General Assembly had just meant taxable costs that you can get, I think that's what they would have said. But in this instance, they're not including just attorney's fees, Mr. Chief Justice, which you might get with costs and attorney's fees, but they're including other fees for the survey, for expert witnesses, for other costs that you've incurred, not just attorney's fees. So I think it's actually more expansive than just costs and attorney's fees.
I'm struggling on how that doesn't hurt you, because if you're talking about the summary procedure and you've got lots of costs, you've got to hire legal costs for this, find out where the boundary line is that, read, someone read the survey and give me an opinion the other. There's an out-of-pocket legal cost. That's different from a litigation prevailing party fee award. And 334 appears to say you get what you are entitled to under 332B, which is all pre-litigation. Why isn't that the fair middle ground here?
Well, I disagree with that, Justice Kelsey, and thank you for that question. I think what happens here is in 332B, you're also assuming that you've engaged in that summary procedure, and I just want to be clear that that did not happen in this case.
Well, then doesn't that hurt you even more because you only get the fees under 334 as a result of costs incurred in the summary procedure?
Well, I don't read it that way. I think this is costs that you get as a result of the timber theft. It says directly related legal costs as a result of the trespass, Justice Kelsey. So I don't think it's just as a result of engaging in a summary procedure. These are costs that were resulted because of the trespass. Ms. Garvey never would have been engaged in litigation with the Chaseys had the trespass not occurred.
Can I interrupt you one more time? I know you don't have much time, but
yes.
Go to 334. We're focusing a lot on 332B, but
yeah.
334, if the amount specified in subsection B of 332 is not paid within 30 days, after rendition of statement, well, there's no statement here because we didn't go through the summary process. The person upon whose land the trespass occurred may proceed for judgment in the amount of payment as specified in 332. Well, the payment specified would be in the statement which is produced at the end of the summary procedure, which we didn't have in this case.
Yes, Your Honor, and then 334 also does point you back to 332, and so when you don't engage in the summary process with 334 and which 332 talk about, you can still go to 332B, which says any directly associated legal cost by the owner of the timber as a result of the trespass. So again, there was a trespass here. These attorney's fees that were awarded would not have been incurred but for the trespass, and 332B is not contingent upon there being the summary procedure in order for you to be awarded those costs, but the language clearly
going back
says
to the Chief's earlier question, your interpretation is not implausible. I'm not trying to suggest
I understand.
Not. It's just at a certain point, the words, the connotation becomes stretched and even more stretched. There's a bit of a thumb on the scale against attorney fees under the American rule. Is it fair for us to read this as expansively as you want us to?
I think it is, Justice, and that goes back to my position that this is a remedial statute, which is exemplified by the 2004 amendments, which allowed for you to treble your damages under this statute and then changed it from cost to any directly related or directly associated legal cost. The intent of the General Assembly was to do just that, was to make the victim whole and to make this an expansive statute so that you would be able to get your attorney fees and your costs that were incurred as a result of this process or as a result of going into litigation. Well, I do think that that is a fair reading. Again, there would be a disincentive for litigants to engage in litigation if they were not going to be awarded their attorney fees in this remedial statute. And I think that's just why this statute is designed as it is, to have that summary procedure so that the parties can work it out pre-litigation. But when they fail to do so, and in this case when the Chaseys failed to participate in that process, it was only fair for Ms. Garvey to go to litigation, and it's only fair for her to be fully compensated for any cost that she incurred as a result of the trespass itself, not just as a result of this summary process that's outlined in 332, because, again, if it hadn't been for the trespass itself that had occurred, none of these costs would have been incurred. If they had engaged in the summary procedure, then we could have it could have been resolved much more quickly. Obviously, cost and attorney fees would have been a lot lower. Their refusal to do so should not penalize Ms. Garvey under a remedial statute, because she still had a timber theft, she still had trespass, she still had a right to seek recourse through the courts in order to be made whole, and part of that includes her costs and attorney's fees. With a remedial statute like this, even when we do have the American rule, the intent of the General Assembly was to make Ms. Garvey whole, including those costs and attorney's fees.
Are you familiar with the with 18.2, 499, and 500 statutory conspiracy statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
But in that statute, they provide for treble damages, they provide for taxable costs, and they provide for attorney's fees. That's the only analogous statute that I know of in the code. Why doesn't this statute provide for attorney's fees when that statute does not?
You mean when that statute
expressly? Why? They know how to do it.
I understand that, Your Honor. And again, I think here it's associated directly associated legal costs. And I think, again, we're going beyond attorney fees. In that case, you get your taxable costs, you would get your attorney fees. But here, it's taking into account the fact that you're going to have to hire expert witnesses and surveyors and that sort of thing. In a business conspiracy case, you might not have those types of costs. So here you have additional costs in addition to those attorney's fees.
See, but that, I think that's part of the problem in the case. I agree that that's probably a reasonable response. You have expert witnesses, et cetera, that they want to make sure that you recover the cost of. Interestingly enough, they have a lot of expert witnesses in the civil conspiracy cases, too, but they didn't say it there.
Understood, Mr. Chief.
But it's so easy to say taxable costs, costs and the legal costs associated therewith, attorney's fees, and treble damages.
Mr. Chief Justice, I can't argue with you that that's easy to say. What I would point you to is that the statute used to say costs. Now it says any directly associated legal costs. The General Assembly intent was to make it more expansive. Attorney's fees, expert witness fees, and those other costs are all included, not just attorney's fees.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I think we understand your argument.
Thank you.
You have 4 minutes and 47 seconds remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justices, I'm in the unique position of being able to be both trial counsel and before you on this appeal. And I think what I recognize most in Appellee's argument is that there's a little bit of speaking over two different and distinct terms. Appellee continues to use trespass interchangeably with the damages sought in 55332. And as Your Honor pointed out earlier, this was a multi-count complaint alleging common law trespass, damage to property, injunctions, various other counts, including a count under 55332.
So the $15,000 award was common law trespass?
Correct, Your Honor. And for that reason, when Appellee, I think, comes before the court and continues to use trespass and references logging trucks and references damage and putting down things on the bridge, that's the common law trespass that's dealt with in a different set of facts and circumstances. Again, what Appellee never addressed is under 55332, we don't have any causal connection in evidence establishing that the appellant was, in fact, responsible for that damage.
What about the inference that the owner saw these trucks, didn't see any other trucks? They're obviously not out there camping.
Your Honor, I think the biggest factual concern with just that mere kind of circumstantial evidence is the alleged time frame that the appellee saw these trucks moving was 2007 to 2008, wherein this surveyor who testified as to the alleged damage along the property line happened in approximately 2013 and 2014. So the problem with depending on an inference from an interested party is the extreme time gap in being able to establish in no conclusive context who or what actually did that particular damage. And also, there's no reference to the possibility that in that time frame additional logging may have taken place by someone we don't know at this time. So I think looking at that, counsel gets a little bit liberal with using trespass to brush a little bit too broad under this particular code section. I think additionally what we also have that counsel didn't talk about, besides no reforestation costs, counsel testified that in the record there's some kind of testimony related to reforestation costs. Well, the appellee was able to testify, but nothing came into evidence relative to establish that actual reforestation costs had occurred. So looking at 55332, looking at the appellees, proof at trial, the motion to strike should have been granted at the time it was made in its entirety.
Counsel argued that there was an estimate submitted in support of the reforestation. Is that not correct?
There was testimony taken as to getting an estimate from a tree service. But in a review of the record, the actual document was kept out for a hearsay objection, which should have been. So under this particular issue, the appellee was able to testify, yes, I've talked to someone about the possibility of replanting trees, but in fact, at this particular juncture, it hadn't happened yet. There hadn't been any reforestation occurred. And again, I point to page 1051 in the record.
Well, we know it hadn't happened. I think the big question is whether or not there was any testimony as to how much it would cost for it to happen.
That's correct. I think that is, and again, with a unique statute, it's almost a codified remedy with the $450 per acre. And I think really what the issue was at trial, has any proof of any relevant conclusive damage been brought forward to avail herself to that statutory remedy? And I look at the record, the answer is no.
Counsel, am I confused that the estimate that was disallowed was the one for the value of the timber cut as opposed to the reforestation?
It was, Your Honor, that's true. The actual timber on the stump value was kept out pre-trial. The appellee attempted to introduce evidence related to reforestation costs, which she was permitted to testify about, that she had engaged with someone prospectively to help her with these reforestation.
Was there a number that was discussed in the testimony?
Your Honor, my recollection, I do not remember specifically. I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Call the next case.